Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much for that news update, Greg. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock. Right now on this day in 1795, the British would capture Cape Town from the Dutch. What a weird time in history. In 1941, Adolf Hitler would order the invasion of Yugoslavia, ordering that for every one German that had been killed, that 100 Yugoslavians should be killed in return. The man had a creative taste for revenge. In 1947, a gentleman by the name of James Cobb would reclaim his title as the holder of the world land speed record, going at 634.4 kilometers per hour. This would be the third time he'd break this record in his lifetime. In 1963, on this day, a show called The Outer Limits would premiere. And in 1974, on this day, the Bild newspaper would be published for the first time. It celebrates 50 years on this day. In 1987, on this day, Othello would be staged for the first time in South Africa with John Canney playing the part of Othello. That would also later be made into a movie around 2 years later in 1989. In 1997, on this day, Steve Jobs would become interim CEO at Apple. And in 2019, on this day, Guantanamo Bay, the prison in the western side of the world, would become the most expensive prison in the world at approximately $13 million per prisoner, according to the New York Times. You're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha, and on the show today, we chat to African Rainbow Capital's co-CEO, Johan van der Merwe, around the performance of ARC over the last year and the way they're starting off the new year. They've got lots to be optimistic about going into the new year with inflows coming into the business, but we'll speak to Johan about that a little later on. Then we've got a conversation with Collins Letswalo, who's the CEO of the Road Accident Fund, around the performance of the Road Accident Fund, the unclaimed or the unpaid claims that still exist, and where to from here for RAF. We've also got a conversation with Nestle. They've decided they want to sell the Cremora business. So we're going to speak to Nestle's spokesperson around that and understand why selling now and what the thought process is behind that deal. Then we've got a conversation as part of our Investec Mind series. We're going to dig into that and get a bit of an understanding around that last episode of the first season of that of vodcast. And then, because it's Monday, there's a personal finance on a Monday. We're going to be taking a look at spring cleaning your finances and how you do that.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Before we get to that, let's take a look at how the markets have been moving throughout the day. It's certainly been an interesting day of movements. Not much has happened in some spheres, but in others, the markets have been quite active. I'm joined on the line by portfolio manager and director at Rand Swiss, Gary Boyson, to take a look at the latest market movements. Gary, good evening. Lovely to speak to you again. Rather flat day on the all share and the top 40 side of things, but resources clearly using this as an opportunity to eke out some of those gains that were lost all those weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the headline index level, yeah, not much to write home about. You know, 4 basis points stronger, which is basically nothing. And a very similar picture in Europe as well. The FTSE also flat. For most of the day, we had Paris and Germany flat as well, but they did slip into negative territory towards the end of the session. As you say, resources up over 1%, but you've got to remember resources are incredibly high beta, which means that when markets move up a little bit, they move up a lot. They're generally more volatile than the other counters on the exchange. But that said, big recovery in platinum stocks today. We had the likes of Sibanye up over 5%, Impala Platinum also up over 5%, Northam up almost 4%. So, big day for the precious metals companies. We had Goldfields also up around 2%, or just under 2% at least. So, a little bit of a recovery, but you just get the sense that the big announcement is going to be on Wednesday evening when Jerome Powell decides how much he's going to cut interest rates by. And you get the sense that the market is just taking this breath and waiting to see what happens.
Gary, what is going to happen? 25 basis points? 50 basis points? Have you spoken to Jerome?
It's a great question. We haven't spoken to him yet. But looking at the interesting facet of this is that you can track the probabilities if you go and look at the Fed funds futures. And you know, for most of the month, we've seen that the market has believed that there's going to be a 25 basis point cut, with the probabilities of that half a percent, the 50 basis points, slowly increasing. This morning, it flipped. We now have a 61% chance that we're going to see half a percent come out of the U.S. interest rates, at least off the federal funds rate, on Wednesday evening. Only 39% chance that we get 25 basis points. So if you had to speculate, you would say that 50 basis points is going to come off the market on Wednesday night. Now, of course, that feeds into the local market as well, because we're obviously going to get inflation numbers for South Africa on Wednesday as the MPC meets. We're going to have a look at those. And then, of course, we'll have the announcement from the MPC meeting. The governor's going to give us our decision. And largely, we're expecting a 25 basis point cut from the South African Reserve Bank. Now, what that's going to do, if we get 50 basis points in the US and only 25 from the South African Reserve Bank, that's going to increase the interest rate differential between the two countries. That could mean we have a significantly stronger rand, because suddenly South African deposits become relatively more attractive, and you'll see a lot of money flooding into South Africa. So currently today, we've got, I think we've started to see that pricing in. So we've got the rand-dollar exchange rate down at 17.60 at the moment. And most of this has come from that dollar weakness. If you look at the dollar index, we're still just a touch above 100, which is down significantly over the last couple of months. But it's all to play for. And I think what this is going to do, it's going to cost a lot of focus on the upcoming data points as well. So we've got U.S. retail sales out tomorrow at 2:30. And I think we're going to see exaggerated movements from the market, depending on how that prints. And you just get the sense that this is going to be a volatile week. We're going to see asset prices moving all over the place as we head into these announcements.
Gary, you brought up something interesting around that interest rate differential. Does it make sense for our Reserve Bank governor to approach it from that perspective, to say this is a unique opportunity to strengthen the rand so that inflation from our perspective in months going forward can be dealt with more sustainably, to say if we do get 50 basis points, to just allow that 25 basis point differential to sit on the market, or to sit on the rand side for a little bit? Do you think that makes sense for decisions from the governor?
It's a good question, and we were discussing it in the office today as well. What is the mechanism behind which the NBC will make that kind of decision? Are they waiting to see, have they got any idea of what's going to come out of the Fed at this stage as well? But, I mean, to your point, the problem is that South Africa's challenges, a lot of South Africans' challenges around inflation are more structural in nature. And our monetary policy has a far more limited effect than you would in an economy like the US. So there's a good argument to be made. That said, our inflation numbers are getting very much the midpoint of the range. We're almost within target. And of course, we understand the growth concerns. We understand the benefit that low interest rates could have on the local economy as well. And I think, the governor and the South African Reserve Bank is facing very similar pressures to what the US is facing. It's really about balancing, acting in time and making sure that you're not acting too late to loosen financial conditions and to drop interest rates, because unfortunately these tools are very blunt and they do look forward 12 to 18 months, and it's very difficult to justify in an economy like South Africa, where we have plus 30% unemployment, very, very constrictive monetary policy.
I take your point on that, Gary, especially given that if we compare it to the US's unemployment rate, which only sits at about 4.2%, they can afford a 50 basis point cut. They have a much bigger population. They have a much higher employed population as compared to South Africa. So perhaps we need to look at things a little differently from that perspective. But sticking with things and looking at things a little differently, I want to get your thoughts on the latest announcements from Sasol. They announced the appointment of a new chairperson. The business has obviously been going through some interesting times around their transition to operating greener and cleaner, and this announcement around the chairperson seems like an interesting one.
Certainly, Miral Dube, who will take the reins as the chairperson of Sasol, has actually been on the board as a non-executive director since 2018. But definitely, a climate heavyweight. Was a chief negotiator for the South African government in terms of climate change negotiations internationally. Holds an MSc from Oxford, specifically with a focus on climate matters as well. So it's an interesting move, and certainly, at this level, leadership in the acceleration of the transformation is going to be key. They have very, very aggressive targets as a company. So, they're looking at a 30% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2030, and essentially to be net zero by 2050. And as I said, that is an incredibly aggressive target, specifically in a country like South Africa, where we have developmental challenges, we have energy security challenges. So to push through almost a green agenda is far more difficult here as well. That said, it's as a company, as an energy producer, they have to change. So hopefully this is a positive step and something that will see real change on the ground, and not just Sasol paying lip service to the general global ESG concerns.
Well, the market has certainly been quite responsive to that. I mean, the share price hasn't really moved much, but the optimism does seem to be sitting there. I guess the Sasol conversation is more around what the performance of the business looks like and how they intend to achieve the points that you've outlined, Gary. Before I let you go, Gary, there was another assassination attempt on a president elect or president, no, actually not president elect, a presidential candidate, Donald Trump, around the or over the weekend rather. Has the market responded to that? Has the US market shown any sign of volatility? There was a bit of a ruckus around the first assassination attempt. I want to get your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking at it, it's very difficult to unpack, exactly what is influencing, things like the gold price or things like volatility, because they are obviously composite indices. But looking at it, we've got the S&P 500 down, call it 0.2% at the moment. The NASDAQ's down around almost 1%. But it's a very mixed bag. And you don't get the sense that there has been a big market reaction. You've got the gold price up slightly, but again, how much of this is fears around what would have potentially happened should Donald Trump have been assassinated? And how much of this is just concerns, maybe traders taking money off the table ahead of that big rate announcement as well. So very difficult to unpack it. No great movements. So we've got the volatility index sitting at 17, which is elevated compared to what we're used to trading between, kind of maybe 10 to 11 up to about 15 in its normal range. So a little bit elevated, but I think that's because we've got a big a week of risk. I think the market's largely shrugging it off. We've got oil prices marginally higher, but difficult to see how that would really flow into the market. If I look at the underlying NASDAQ, for example, it's also very mixed bags, almost the same kind of trading that we saw on the South African exchange today. You've got the likes of Nvidia down 2.5%, Arm Holdings also down 2.5%, ASML, obviously the semiconductor fabricator, down 2.5%. But on the other side, you've got things like Intel up almost 4%, and CrowdStrike after its big fall also up around 3.5%. So very mixed bag in the NASDAQ, and difficult to pinpoint the exact impact of what the second assassination attempt has resulted in.
Perhaps markets just have too much to contend with. I think we'll leave it at that, Gary. Thanks as always for the time and for the insights. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager and Director at Rand Swiss, joining me to reflect on the market movements of the day, some that happened over the weekend, and just what the markets might be thinking for the week ahead.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Bright and early this morning, ARK Investments gave us their full year numbers. I'm of course referring to African Rainbow Capital. They gave us their numbers for the year ended the 30th of June 2024. I have the privilege of speaking to ARK's co-CEO Johan van der Merwe to catch up on the numbers and just get a sense of how the business performed over the last year. Good evening, Johan. Lovely to speak to you again. Net asset value of the business up pretty much in line with what was last year's performance, but intrinsic net asset value significantly gaining from that. What do you make of the performance? How do you feel about it as a team?
Good evening, Jimmy. Always, like always, very nice speaking to you. Thank you. Yes, we're happy, given the circumstances with quite a few headwinds in the operating environment, especially with the with the uncertainty, with the run-up to the elections, and some geopolitical tensions that are still experiencing in the world, you know, I think the portfolio did well. Yes, we did a 21.5% increase in our net asset value, but we have to admit that 750 million of the 3 billion or so that we increased with was an asset raise. So the increase in the portfolio was actually about 2.7 billion rand, which is more in line with about 16% that we've done in the last year.
2.6, 2.7 billion rand is not a small number by any stretch of the imagination. I want to take a look at the two biggest contributors towards that. I think undoubtedly the expansion or the growth that we've seen in the TymeBank business to the tune of around 1.2 billion rand in fair value gains, and the Rain business, 600 million rands there. What has been driving that? Has that been a lot of international business, local business, or a combination of both?
It's a combination. On the Rain side, it's only local, but obviously on the Time side, it includes the international side as well. Now those two are, you know, by quite a margin, our largest investments in the group. So on a relative basis, they should actually give you the largest. But they also were two sterling performers in our portfolio. As you know, the Rain valuation is done on a discounted cash flow basis. So we look at the future cash flows that we expect and we discount that at a certain rate. We use quite a high discount rate because it is it's not really a startup, but it's still this earlier stage type of business. And, you know, it's really just that unwinding of the discount rate of close to 20% that gives you the unwind of the value there. So that increased by probably about 500 million or so, if I'm not mistaken. And then on the Time side, we actually use the value of the last transactions that we've done. We do quite a bit of asset raises, especially to fund the business offshore. You know, we've gone into the Philippines, now going into Vietnam as well, and the next stop is going to be Indonesia. And we need quite a bit of cash on that side to grow the business. On the South African side, we've reached break even. So we don't really need more cash on this side to build the business. But that's the value at which we raise the new funds. And people are willing to buy TymeBank at that price. So that's actually, you know, very gladly accepted.
Johan, speaking of cash and the additional outlays that the business needs to commit to, I mean, there's additional CapEx commitments that have been put forward for each of the businesses going forward. But alongside that, the last time you and I caught up, you said you don't really like keeping a lot of cash on hand. And at the time, it was around 500 million rand this time last year. Now we're at about 163 million. But you've also kind of sold a couple of things. I remember the last time you and I sat down to chat about this, you had sold off a couple of interests as a holding company, as an investment firm. What's the strategy at the moment? What's the thinking around the business? I see the core business is down to a couple of assets, 12 or so investments, and really that's a concentration that you guys are focusing on.
That's right. Our top 12 investments make up about 90% of the portfolio now. And we do have quite a long tail, to be honest. But that long tail, there's a little bit more method in the madness there, in the sense that it's smaller businesses that we incubate within the ARC environment. And usually we roll them into other businesses of ours. Or, you know, sometimes we hope that one of those small ones actually become a unicorn at the end of the day. But to talk about the cash, we've got less cash at the end of the year, but you know that end of the year is the 30th of June, which is very much a snapshot in time. But obviously it's an ongoing process by selling and buying businesses, etc. And we were obviously busy with a few transactions that happened after year end. So the ARC fund actually got a very nice inflow of about 1.3 billion rand after year end, which obviously doesn't show in the numbers, because I have to admit 160 million of cash at the end of the year, you know, which make you feel a bit uncomfortable if there wasn't any other money coming in. So we're very happy with that 1.3 billion. But you're right, we also don't want to sit on cash for too long. But, you know, I would say at least 60% of that has already been spoken for in terms of other investments that we're looking in, some of our other investments that we're also supporting in growing, etc. So I think from a cash flow point of view, we are in a very, very healthy and comfortable state.
Johan, if I could we take a look at some of the corporate adjustments that have taken place quite recently? I'm referring to the Sanlam Life cleanup of their holdings, the 25% adjustment between the businesses there, but also the incoming of Carl Westvig into the TymeBank business. Obviously, part of these decisions and the thinking around it is to just make the business leaner where it needs to be, but also just prepare for your future plans. Take me through perhaps some of the developments that might be coming out.
Yeah, so that's a very good remark, I have to say, Jimmy. So a few years back, Sanlam bought into our financial services investment businesses, but the whole financial services we had to split between all the banking-related assets and the non-banking-related assets, which are really insurance and asset management. And they bought 25% in the insurance and asset management part because they had relationships with the Capitec and FNBs, etc. But those relationships have come to an end. It was just a normal end of that type of relationship. And then they saw their way through to invest in TymeBank. And because Sanlam is going much more in the fintech area, and they appointed Rian van Dijk to really look at that entire part of Sanlam, they were very, very interested in TymeBank, which is obviously a digital bank. And in that cluster, we also have Crossfin, which is kind of like almost I call it a flea market of fintech businesses. You know, some of them early stage, et cetera, but very, very promising businesses. And now they've decided to buy 25% of that as well, so that they will hold actually 25% of all ARC's financial services kind of like investments. So Carl was actually the CEO of one of the businesses within Crossfin that we actually bought into TymeBank, and that's how he was brought into TymeBank. And he worked with that for quite a while. I mean, he was with Retail Capital. We've actually rolled Retail Capital out to Philippines now as well. And the CEO up till now, Koen Jonker, he's going to go into the our Asian businesses now, and Carl is going to take over as CEO in South Africa. I think he's a seasoned professional. He understands the business. As I say, you know, the Retail Capital that he used to run before makes up a big part of TymeBank. And yeah, that's the way that that we're seeing that unfolding over the next while.
Clearly some repositioning, but some very intelligent repositioning at that. Johan, before I let you go, the last time we chatted, we looked at the discount within the business. It was a serious concern, and we kind of looked at a couple of options. And I remember at the time when I asked around unbundling, you said that it might have been too soon to explore that. How are you feeling about the fact that the share price, even though it was up for the day, is still trading at a significant discount of around 40% to the net asset value? Are you thinking unbundling? Are you thinking potentially even just delisting and saying, you know what, this is not a fair representation of our business?
Yeah, I must say we're a bit disillusioned with the market, how they look at it. But, you know, they say the market's never wrong. So what we can do is to put the score on the board, and hopefully the market will reward us eventually. You know, we haven't sold one investment for less than net asset value in the past. But the market is making us trade at 40% of a discount. You know, so that's why we've also, during the last year, bought back quite a number of ARC-y shares, because we say if we can buy our own portfolio at a discount of 40 to 50%, you know, it's probably one of the best investments that we can make. Now, whether one should delist or not is a big question, because I think there are benefits for that and case to be made against it, et cetera. But, you know, we would be negligent if we don't at least discuss it and consider it on an annual basis. And it is always on the table. But we'll see how things develop in the next while. You know, I think some of our early stage investments are also going to go through that J curve. They're going to be profitable. I think the likes of Arain could start paying dividends, etc. And maybe the market then looks at us a little bit differently, because they can see that these investments start generating cash and paying dividends. So let's hope that the discount can come down to a more respectable, say, 20% or so.
Well, whether the market chooses to recognize it or not, shareholders out there that invest in the ARC Group, those that see the value in the business as a whole, would be shareholders and would be happy with the performance. And nonetheless, thank you so much, Johan, for the time and for the insights. Johan Fundamatova, co-CEO at the African Rainbow Capital family, joining us to reflect on the year that was for them, as well as what lies ahead into 2025.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. It's the private banking service we are known for, now available for your business. Because you never settle for ordinary, neither should your business. Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary. Investec Bank Limited, a registered credit and authorized financial services provider.
The Road Accident Fund came out with a update around the performance for the year that was March 2024, joined on the line by the RAF's CEO, Collins Lizzuolo, to take a look at the performance as well as some of the announcements from the RAF. Good evening, Dr. Lizzuolo. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start by reflecting on the numbers. It's a 1.6 billion rand deficit from a performance perspective, and we're coming towards the end of the 2020-2025 turnaround strategy. Your thoughts?
Good evening. Good evening to the listeners. We remain optimistic that we are on the right course. As it is, this is a stabilization phase where a lot of things that we do are about efficiencies and trying to increase the money that we pay to the beneficiary. If you look at it, when we started, we paid about 27 billion. We have increased that to about 45 billion a year. And if you look at it, we have got a fuel level of 48 billion. So we have paid 45 billion of that in claims, which is something that for us is a good performance.
That's quite a heavy number. I mean, that's about a 90 plus percent of what the money that's come into the RAF. I want to get your thoughts around the performance of the RAF in the last 5 years. Obviously, the turnaround strategy was to take the business from what was projected to be some 51 billion rands by now to what is now around 8.3 billion in unpaid or unsettled claims at this stage. Take me through the performance over the last 5 years and what has been achieved.
Well, what we have done is that over the years, we have reduced what we call administrative costs. If you remember when we started, 40 cents of every rand that we collected in fuel levy actually went to administrative costs. And our view was that that is too high for any fund to operate under that. So we have been decreasing quite steadily the RNYP, which is the short-term debt, by simply taking away from legal costs. So we have saved about 24 billion in the last 4 years in legal costs that we have now paid over to claimants. And this we have driven through that process of reducing administrative costs and making sure that the money goes where it should go. So usually funds of this nature would have about 10 to 15% of costs. So that's what we are driving towards. If you look at our cost to income ratio is about 22%, which is still slightly high. We want to drive that to about 7% less, which is around 15, and push it a bit down. But as I said today, the issue of efficiencies can go this much, because the biggest problem that we have is this litigious way of actually settling claims, which is actually put in our legislation that forces us to, because it's based on delict, to go to court all the time, whereas all other social benefit schemes all over the world work on the basis of people claiming and not necessarily prosecuting a claim through a delictual claim.
Mr. Lizzuolo, given that this is the view of the board that is currently in place, and this board was put in place in 2019, what has the board done in kind of the 5 years to change the model of the business so that this is the way that claims are processed? Because as you said, the current method is not sustainable and will definitely see the Road Accident Fund run out of money soon.
Yeah, we had a board in 2019, and last year there was a board that was appointed from the 1st of October last year, which has got 3 years still to go from last year in October. So it usually takes about 3 years. The aim there, as I say, was just to make sure that we stabilize the business by reducing the administrative costs. And that has driven that. And you can see with our settlement of claims that has grown from about 56% to about 81.9%, meaning that we settle this claim by agreement rather than going to court. That is the only way that you can do it. But the reality is that efficiencies and driving performance from an operational side cannot help you deal with what is systemic, which is the legislation. So we need a defined benefit scheme that can work on the basis of people actually claiming. But one of the things is the exclusion, that the people that can actually afford to find cover for themselves must not benefit from social benefits, because the reality is that RAF is a social benefit scheme, so the people in the middle class and others that can afford, they don't have to be part of the scheme going forward. And that can only be achieved through the changes legislation, which is outside the realm of both the board and the management.
Mr. Ntsala, are you tabling these recommendations to the legislative powers that be? I mean, surely as a board, surely as the RAF, you can put forward to the parliament in the next review or in your next account to the parliament to say, these are the recommendations we would like to put forward?
Yes, the recommendations we have done, certainly in terms of Section 11.1A, Roman Figure 2, the board has got the powers to make recommendations to the minister in respect of the entire of the any amendments to the act, and of course amendments or any regulation that are made under the act. So of course we have done that, and that's what resulted in what we call the Road Accident Fund Amendment Bill that was released last year, and it went out for comment. So all those things are in there, which includes us being able to pay in annuity, which includes the RAF adjudicator being put instead of people taking the matters to court, which includes a lot of other matters, including the fact that this scheme must now change to be a defined benefit scheme.
Mr. Lozano, before I let you go, I want to look at those legal costs that you touched on. You obviously said that the business is aiming to have these as sort of out-of-court settlements rather than in-court legal proceedings. Just shy of 4 billion rand in legal costs is still a hefty sum, and that number is projected to keep increasing at this stage. What's the plan here?
No, it's not projected to keep increasing. If you look at where we got it, we are sitting in 2018-19 at 10.126 billion. And in 1921, we started, we reduced it to 9.43 billion. In 2020, 2021, 3.9 billion. 21, 22, 3.7 billion. And we are now sitting at about 3.9 billion. So if you look at it in the context of 10.6 billion, that was the highest number that we paid. So it's something that has flattened out at around 4 billion. When we think that 6 billion in savings a year is quite a magnificent achievement in our view.
Well, we'll have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for the time and for the insights. That is Collins Letsolo, CEO at the Road Accident Fund, on the performance that was the last financial year, as well as what they've tabled to ensure that the RAF remains sustainable.
Hello, Jeremy Maggs here. I've just finished recording the next episode of Fix SA on MoneyWeb. I'm in conversation with the former chief executive of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and soldier, Roy Anderson. We'll be looking at leadership style and approach when it comes to solving problems, comparing the role of discipline in military and civilian leadership, and strategies for setting and achieving goals under pressure.
Join me, Jeremy Maggs, and South Africa's top leaders on the fortnightly MoneyWeb Fix SA podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
6:38, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the SAFM Market Update. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha, and we're taking a look at the Nestle decision to sell Cremora. I'm joined on the line by Nestle's spokesperson, Mota Mota, to take a look at this and try and understand why. Good evening, Mota. Thanks so much for taking the time. The business has been around, at least in South Africa, for 77 years or so. It's an iconic brand. Clearly, this wasn't an easy decision to part ways with it.
Not at all, Jimmy, and thank you for having me on the call. Yeah, the decision really stems from a very comprehensive review that we conducted to drive the growth and see some of the enhancement deficiencies within our business model. And of course, we understand that there's been a little bit of an outcry with Cremora being going on sale to Lactalis South Africa, you know, pending regulatory approval, of course. But as one of the most household name brands in the country over the last 8 years or so, we really needed to see the alignment with our broader vision of fostering growth in our strategic portfolios. And hopefully from that point on, we'll already start to see that in the good hands of Lactalis South Africa, that the consumers will be better served in that way.
Mota, let's look at that strategic focus that you touched on. Obviously, this is something that the business would, one, not have taken lightly, but two, would be looking to reposition itself going forward. Take me through what that strategy looks like. I understand that some of the assets within the business, like the Harare production plant, are being repurposed and not necessarily sold. So what's the business doing at the moment?
So we're really looking to sharpen our focus within our Eastern Southern Africa region, which really is a house of 23 countries that we oversee. So as we look to see that, you know, we had to move forward in a growth potential market, understanding some of those market dynamic shifts that really made us think over a very long-term period of why we had to choose for the sale for Cremora to be out in the market. So for us, it was about realigning the portfolio. And with that, we saw an opportunity for that growth. But I wanted to emphasize, Jimmy, that our commitment in this region is still steadfast. Alongside of that, you mentioned the point around Harare or Zimbabwe, which was currently a production facility for Cremora within that region. But that really just means that the Cremora will halt in production at that point. And we really have very two strong brands, Nestle Everyday, which is a powdered milk, as well as our CeraVe cereals. And those are already equipped to continue production. So really it's just about, again, reshifting and pivoting some of those ideas and then moving across through to some, you know, where we can currently have South Africa continue to produce Cremora for the time being.
Mota, when we look at the Cremora business, how much of that was that? How much of that asset actually made up the revenue line item, how much of it did it contribute towards the overall Nestlé Group's performance?
Significantly. Look, I can't disclose the exact numbers to that point of view. Of course, we are in a very sensitive moment right now with us having to put the business up with Lactalis South Africa. But what I would say is that it was very much part and parcel of a real strategic category for us. We continue to review our business and categories quite often, and the decision was really through that thorough assessment where we looked at some of those consumer preferences, looking exactly where we're taking the region going forward. And this decision does not affect our commitment in any way to Africa, but most importantly, South Africa. And I also wanted to mention that with this decision that we've taken, there has been no impact on job losses. So that is also one of the very key reasons why we could operating this view and seeing that we can continue to supply our customers and the consumers, those service levels will not be disrupted at any point.
That's quite an interesting take on it, and especially from a business perspective to say, even in the loss of an asset that contributes to our business, we're not going to jeopardize jobs. We're going to do whatever we can to protect the jobs that exist within the company. Mota, what does the a management team have in mind for the rest of the business? Are we looking at potentially as part of the strategy getting rid of some other non-core assets or even bringing in new assets? Is that something that's in conversation?
What I can say is, yes, we are looking, because currently the consolidation of our factory site where Cremora is currently housed shares the premises with our Maggi noodles plant, as well as our Nescafe cappuccino mixers, which basically are your sachets. And we've now decided to take the cappuccino mixers facility to the home of coffee in our world, and that would be to Escort in the coming year or so. So we're definitely not looking to offset anymore. We're actually wanting to reinvest where it makes sense for us, and that portfolio choice will really start to see a real difference in how we are able to drive that efficiency that I spoke about earlier on in our value chain. So very much part of the strategic review was for us to ignite some of those potential points and really start to see how we can invest better and deliver more value to our consumers.
Is there a conversation happening at the moment around what to do if the Competition Commission doesn't give the go-ahead for the deal to go through? I mean, I imagine this is not the ideal situation, of course, but does that create any sort of problem for the business? Cremora surely would be happy to stay within the Nestlé Group.
100%. We'd be happy to stay within an SLA group. Of course, you know, we leave it into the hands of the Competition Commission to make their ruling. But for us, and as well as Lexile South Africa, you know, we've put together the best minds to really unpack and understand the strategic value for both brands that would make sense. So ultimately, until that point, until we understand what that decision would be from Competition Commission, you know, we remain in the hands of the process at this moment.
Mota, as a business, Nestle has been very deliberate around not disclosing the transaction value at this stage around that. And I'm not going to ask you to give me the number, but would you be able to comment on whether or not it's a profitable sale for the Nestle Group?
I think you've partly answered your own question. You know, this is very much a point in which, look, I can say that both companies, South Africa and Nestle, have had a strategic vision, right? So we all have the passion for the brand. We want to see it fostering growth. And we're absolutely thrilled to have such a formidable company show an interest in us. I mean, for the listeners online who don't really know much about Lexile South Africa, they're a company home to quality and trusted brands such as President, Parmalat, Mauro's, Sterry Stumpy for the kids, of course, and Bonita. So it's really a part of the transaction is subject to that approval. Only in the event of that being obtained would we have a better idea, you know, where that might lead us. But for now, I can't really say.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how the conversation unfolds. For now, it looks as though the sale is on the table, subject to approvals, of course, and we'll have to see what those approvals look like. Thank you so much for the time and for the insights, Mota. That's Mota Mota, who is the spokesperson at the Nestle business, joining us to reflect on their decision to sell the Cremora asset within their portfolio.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. So Investec's been running a vodcast series titled Investec Minds for the longest time. The series is aimed to tap into some of the most valuable minds within that Investec business and within the investment landscape. Each episode is meant to offer some interesting insights into relevant topics and potential investment opportunities that you and I might be able to take advantage of. The series has come to the end of its first season, but before we close out that season, we have a snippet from the last episode of that season. The host, of course, of that show is Fifi Peters, and in this particular episode, she chats to Leanne Large and Frida Hammersma around the various investment avenues, including fixed income, debt, and credit markets that institutional investors take advantage of. Let's listen in on that conversation.
Hello and welcome to the sixth and the final episode of season one of the Investec Minds podcast with myself, Fifi Peters. We finish off the season by looking at the investment universe at large. It is a big universe. It's a complex universe with quite a number of players all looking to maximize their returns, from asset managers and pension funds, insurance companies, banks, as well as retail investors like you and me. But to help us understand how the world of money moves in a specific or two specific investment corridors, I am joined by Leanne Large. She's the head of distribution and loan syndication at Investec Corporate Investment Banking, as well as Frida Hammersma, who is the head of multi-asset structuring at ICIB. So ladies, this investment ecosystem or universe that we're talking about, quite large, quite complex. Let's perhaps begin with understanding exactly where each of you fit into it. Frida, beginning with you.
Yes. So let's start with the Manor Street. Me or you, we want to invest or save. So we buy unit trust or our pension fund money. Contributions are made every month, being deducted from our salary, or even I want to buy life insurance. All of this money then gets pooled and is being managed by asset managers or life companies. And these are our clients. So they're looking to then invest the money in either property, could be equity. But where we come in is fixed income and credit. This is where we then provide products where they bulk all of the money that they receive from their retail investors. And we provide the wholesale products for them to invest in.
Leanne?
At the end of the day, these institutions and life companies are trying to source from a variety of sectors available, and those can be your government bonds, corporates, SOEs and property. And from that, they would be able to get quite a good diversification within the funds and be able to obtain some form of target return. So over the last long period, there has been this subdued need for new funding, mm-hmm. and fixed income assets have been very scarce to find. So what investors have done is, as the corporate sector has become smaller, the SOEs have been not accessing the debt capital markets as much. That whole sector has fallen away. And property has also become a little bit more muted over a certain period. So what investors then did is they looked to try and continue utilizing the cash that has been sitting in the funds and looking for opportunities where the yields were higher. Mm-hmm. So things like government bonds, which had very attractive returns, makes sense for a lot of the institutions to put into the funds. But what we're really needing is some additional growth, mm-hmm. and that then enhances the need for these counterparties to raise money. So corporates would generally raise money through banks. Mm-hmm. As they get to critical size, they may need to look at alternative formats of raising the money. And that's where they could set up a bond program and start issuing bonds in the market, which institutions can then buy and obtain that holistic diversification within the funds.
Okay, so activity has essentially been a little bit wanting right now, if I'm understanding you correctly, because the economy hasn't been growing. Is that what it is?
Exactly, yes. So instead of new companies coming through, maybe requiring money to set up new factories or invest within the country, that has been muted with the uncertainty, political uncertainty that we've come from, and has created less of a need for this additional funding. So as this liquidity has built up locally, that scarcity of assets and demand and supply dynamic has been extreme, and that has put pressure on pricing.
Frida, it's a broad question on the political climate right now and how that has influenced your world for the better, if at all.
After elections, where one could see that the country is now maybe on more stable footing in terms of government, you know, that just poses more opportunities for investors coming into the South African bond market, feeling that it's giving good returns for now, maybe a slightly safer investment opportunity. So yes, it's definitely been a very positive outcome for our bond market.
Okay. And I think with you know, this green shoots and a slightly more positive attitude that seems to be coming through, you can definitely feel there's more energy within the bank, more opportunities that deal teams are wanting to take through, looking for new funding partners and investments. And I think that all plays well in terms of creating the supply that we need. Once we have more supply, pricing levels should even out. There's more opportunities. So I think we're sitting in a good position for now. And as a bank looking to take it forward and maximize private, public sector participation to try and help the economy and help grow businesses.
Thanks to the both of you for joining season finale of the Investec Minds podcast. Thanks. And really giving us a better understanding of what your investment corridor does do and what it looks like. Thank you.
Thank you.
The views expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm and should not be taken as advice or recommendations. Investec Bank Limited, an authorized financial services provider and registered credit provider.
This feature was brought to you by Investec Business Banking.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. It's the private banking service we're known for, now available for your business. Because you never settle for ordinary, neither should your business. Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary. Investec Bank Limited, a registered credit and authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We are well into September, which means technically we're well into spring. And with spring and with a change of season often comes some restructuring that takes place at home. I know for one, I am very happy to be able to get rid of my winter clothing, bring out some shorts again, not looking forward to any cold weather. And so while we're doing all these changes at home, while we're adjusting to the change of seasons, we thought, why not spring clean some finances as well? So that's what we're going to be looking at in this week's Personal Finance, how to spring clean your finances. And I'm joined on the line by Senior Actuary at Metropolitan Life, Nydia Lawrence, to take a look at this and try and understand it. Good evening, Nydia. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start by taking a look at the importance of financial literacy, financial planning, and financial conversations in today's world.
Thank you, Jimmy. Unfortunately, South Africa does not have a very good literacy rate, and even our financial literacy is extremely low compared to the rest of the world. The downside of that is that we raise our kids thinking that money can be spent first instead of teaching them to save first and then to spend. If one considers the value of money in that way and to have a forward projection in terms of thinking that you have to save for the future when things are uncertain, it actually gives you more security as well.
Nydia, the new two-pot system has come into effect, and obviously that's had people rethinking how they approach their finances, and we've also spoken about things like having emergency funds and things in the past. But when we look at spring cleaning finances, what do we really mean here?
To me, it is to have to go back to basics, to groom your budget and really check that you are spending less than you earn. It is to have a relook at your financial goals. If your circumstances have changed, you might need to amend them. And then thirdly, plan for preservation, and that's where the two-pot comes in. And we can chat about that as well if you want to. But also to review things like your insurance coverage and look at your debt. And do you save enough for emergencies that we've just spoken to? Now, the thing with two-pots is many people think, great, now it's a chance to actually get some of my money. But unfortunately, you won't get what you request, and we can talk about that.
Absolutely. You certainly, I mean, the first things first is you're going to get whatever you request, less taxes, and then less fees and all sorts of other things around that. But let's look at the two-pot in the context of the refresher and in the context of planning for preservation. I mean, the importance around saying, okay, even if we are re-looking at finances, some of the things we mustn't forget about is preservation of funds.
Absolutely. Even at Metropolitan, that is really what we would like to land with our clients, is that the purpose of a retirement annuity, the purpose of a pension fund, preservation fund, is to protect your retirement savings for retirement. The reason for the introduction of two-pot by the government was first and foremost for preservation, because the retirement pot can now not be accessed when you resign. The savings pot is there for emergencies only. And of course, yes, that will help people when they are in dire situations. But apart from the taxes that will be deducted, SARS can also deduct any arrear tax. And it can also put you in a high income bracket, because SARS will add that withdrawal amount to your overall income level for the year and recalculate your marginal tax rate.
Mm. Nydia, how do I refresh my finances if I've gotten myself into a bit of a pickle? So the last couple of years have not been easy on any of us, with interest rates being so high, and it's caused us to make some decisions, maybe take on some debt that we didn't want to, or maybe have to sell off some things that we didn't plan to. How do we refresh that situation and get back on the right footing?
Anyone's finances will flourish when you manage your debt effectively. And typically that is to look at all your interest rates, where you pay the interest rate that apply to debt, and tackle the ones with the highest interest rates first. And do it bit by bit, as you would eat an elephant, and reduce your debt first. On the side, also build up an emergency fund, even if it's just a little bit, because time is your greatest friend. And compound interest, even if you only save a little bit, it really grows up. And then to see where you can actually cut by making smart changes. like have a relook at your insurance coverage. Can't you get a requote on short-term insurance to see whether somebody can actually quote you a lower amount? Reevaluate your situation. Do you really need that specific insurance cover? Is the amount right? And also relook at it when your circumstances change, where you can cut there. But the principle is to reduce debt as far as possible, take out smart debt if you can, and stay within budgets if you can.
Nydia, that emergency fund, what would be the best way to build a fund like that? Because I imagine it would have different considerations and it requires a certain level of discipline. What would be the best kind of, whether it's a vehicle to put that emergency fund into, or the best kind of approach to building that fund?
Emergencies is usually short-term. So the ideal is to invest money in short-term investments where your capital would be preserved. And ideally, you would want to save at least 3 months of your salary in emergency funds, because anything can happen, and then you can actually access that money without risking the capital of the investment. The best is, if one doesn't know in which vehicle to invest, is to talk to your financial advisor, who can really guide you there.
Have a discussion with your financial advisor. Be sure to be open and honest around the conversations that you are having. They are for your benefit at the end of the day. I think we'll leave it at that. Nydia, thanks so much for the time and for the insights. That's Nydia Lawrence, Senior Actuary at Metropolitan Life, taking a look at how to refresh your finances and how to spring clean your finances as we head into spring. It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Host is standing by with the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.